Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mary and Melissa Show, which is a project of the Inclusion Zone, 501c3, coming at you straight from Washington, D.C. Hello, everyone. This is Mary Dolan, and I am one of your hosts. Melissa Rizzio is not with us today, but we're going to be in excellent hands with myself and two wonderful guests. I'd like to tell you a little bit about today's show. I am personally really excited about this topic and our intro by Bobby Darin titled Multiplication, which this is a show that's going to be a little bit about math, but mostly about the need for continued reaching for independence and striving for dignity for people with disabilities. And as a parent of a child with disability, I know firsthand of the need to have folks like these two who are on our show today who are helping to make every day better. We're joined by Mark Fries, who is the Senior Vice President at Merrill Lynch Special Needs Planning Group and is a frequent contributor to our show, and we're very happy to have him as an ongoing contributor to our show, and I'm going to make sure that I've got him on the line here. And then we also have with us Sarah Weir, and Sarah is the president of the National Down Syndrome Society, and we are going to be talking about the ABLE Act, the Achieving a Better Life Experience Act, which was signed into law by President Obama just before Christmas as a wonderful holiday gift for our community, and we are here today to speak about what is this ABLE Act, what does it mean, what will it do, what won't it do for families. So I'd like to just have Sarah, can you give a quick shout out, make sure you're on the line?
Yes, hello Mary, how are you?
Oh, terrific, great, glad to have you on the show again. And Mr. Mark Fries, do we have you on the line?
Yes, I'm here, how are you?
Excellent. Terrific. All right. Well, congratulations to you both and to the community as a whole for bringing this thing to the touchdown, for getting this ABLE Act signed, sealed, and delivered in time for a new year. So kudos to you and the entire community. I'd like to just find out, Sarah or Mark, were you or any of your colleagues at the actual signing? Can you tell us about that?
Sure, yes. My team from NDSS, several of my staff, several of our board members, and also several of our advocates from across the country who played a role in getting this across the finish line, were able to join the Vice President and celebrate the passage of ABLE just a few weeks ago. It was an incredible, incredible day, and we're able to share the stories. We had several members of Congress who were our champions in getting this done also join us.
I'm sure that must have been a really fantastic day. And before I get too deep into all of that hoopla, because I do love the name dropping pieces of it, but let's just the ABLE Act. From what I've been reading, you can save up to $100,000 now without risking your eligibility for Social Security and other government programs. Means you can keep your Medicaid coverage no matter how much money you have in the account. So all that, and it's tax-free, and all that sounds pretty good, but I'd like to get into the weeds with you all about that, and even with a terrific day of signing, what is this going to actually mean for mainstream America people with disabilities? So, Sarah, can you just take us back for a moment? You've been working on this for a long time. What caused this to become such a legislative priority for your organization and the disability community as a whole?
That's a terrific question. one of the reasons we prioritized ABLE, because in terms of the ability to not only save money for the future, what we've done is create essentially a 529 account for people with disabilities so that they can put money away for expenses related to the disability. But from a civil rights, a human rights component, this legislation, for the first time ever, puts a stake in the ground that people with Down syndrome and other disabilities can actually save money and work and remain on their federal benefits that they rely on significantly to get through, you know, the day-to-day needs of their lives. And so we're just very excited that the ABLE Act is now a reality. We're pushing really, really hard to get ABLE Act pieces of legislation adopted in states, and I can talk about that on today's show on where the next advocacy push needs to happen, because our job is certainly not done yet. We have 25 states already that have taken action on ABLE, and then we also have to work on the U.S. Treasury regulations before an individual with Down syndrome or another disability can walk into a financial institution and open up an ABLE account. And I'm sure Mark will talk more specifically about what that's going to look like from his perspective.
Please, yeah. And, you know, it's exhausting, isn't it? You know, this is a tremendous victory, and but the devil's in the details. So, but Mark, I wanted to ask about, you know, your perspective, having been in this business of helping families financially plan for, you know, quite a while, you know, having to do it yourself. Can you explain on a personal level, a professional level, how this is going to change families' planning, financial planning for their loved ones? I know that's kind of a real open-ended question, but there used to be a script I would imagine you and your colleagues would have when guiding a family through financial planning for their future with a person with a disability. But now there's a new one. How is that different now?
Well, I think there's a bunch of differences. I mean, the first is that it, and I agree with Sarah 100%, it empowers all people with disabilities. So there are a lot of cases now where people are getting Social Security benefits, and those benefits are paying for their basic needs, but, you know, they only get a small amount of money every year, $700 and some odd a month, so it's a small stipend. But it now allows them to be able to get more than that and to save that money and to not feel that if they work harder or get a better job or keep a job or in many cases only work, you know, part-time or half-time, that they're penalized. And the original rules is they were only allowed to have $2,000 in their name, or, and you're talking about planning, or hire an attorney and set up a special needs trust and go through all that expense, and having to, you know, set up a bunch of money into that potentially. Or the other choice they had was what's called a pool trust, which in some cases can be less expensive, and that is another avenue. So in the financial planning part, what ABLE has done is open up another bucket. And I describe, you know, Social Security benefits as your first bucket. That's where you're getting money coming in. Your second bucket is ABLE. It's going to be more of a transactional-based account. It's going to have open architecture. I mean, you can use it for lots of different purposes. It's not restricted like Social Security benefits are restricted. So you do a lot of other things with the money. And then your third bucket might be a special needs trust or a special needs pool trust. So it'll allow families that have special needs members or special needs members themselves, because it is a directed account. I mean, that, the owner of that account is going to be the person with the disability. It allows them to be able to have more choices and more power in their financial choices.
So moving from a very wobbly two-legged stool to perhaps a steadier three-legged stool, sounds like.
I think that's true, but I think that the empowerment, and this is probably one of the most important pieces of legislation that's come along since the American Disabilities Act. I mean, it really allows people to be able to work and not have to worry about that work taking away from other benefits that they could possibly get. And it's not just, you know, the Social Security benefits, it's the health benefits. I mean, Medicaid is a big benefit for a lot of people, and so they're still able to get that. And it allows other people to help them if they want to, so other people can contribute to this account for them. There are some limitations on the amount of money you can put in per year, which we can go over into some of the details. And there are limitations on who's going to be eligible for this particular account. So if you had a disability, you know, and you just got it and you're, you know, 55 years old, that's not going to be somebody that's eligible for the ABLE Act. There are some very specific rules on who is eligible and who can open these accounts up.
Yeah, I do want to get into that. So there's a couple of things. Why don't we take the age thing first of all. How and why is it 26? So you need to have your disability by age 26. Why is that a magic number?
Terry, you want to cover that?
I'm happy to address that, Mary. Well, one of the challenges we faced last summer was the original cost that came back from the Congressional Budget Office came out a very, very high number in the mid $20 billion range over 10 years. And what that demonstrated was there were some loopholes in the legislation that allowed for older Americans to remain on Medicare, work, maybe not work, and receive and be eligible for an ABLE account. So what we did working with our folks and our champions on Capitol Hill was we went back and looked at the original intent of the legislation, and that was to help the most severe disabled, but also to help a number of the organizations that have been at the forefront of this advocacy effort. And so the age 26 was put in to help, one, cut down the score, but also to make sure that we had something politically viable that we were able to get across the finish line at the end of the last Congress. You know, we have worked very, very hard to generate a lot of momentum and a lot of co-sponsors on this bill. I challenge everybody to find another piece of legislation that has 381 members of the House, so 381 out of 435 in the House, and 78 out of 100 in the Senate, and both sides of the aisle. So the stakes were really high to get this across the finish line, and the age 26 helped us cut down the score.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so for those of us who haven't really gone through this, you know, really precarious legislative development and CBO scoring, so we're talking about a CBO score. It scored the bill very high, $20 billion. So that means what? It was going to cost the U.S. government $20 billion a year to run this thing. And so everybody said, no way, find a way to cut some billions off.
So the Congressional Budget Office score basically or essentially looks at what the cost to the federal government is to administer this program. And we're essentially creating a new program under the 529 existing program that provides ABLE accounts to millions and millions of Americans with disabilities. And that number is essentially in the mid $20 billion range over 10 years. We were able, with the changes that were made in the House Ways and Means markup, to get it to about $2 billion over 10 years.
Okay. So if we have time at the end, I'd love to hear just what the reaction, if there was any pushback from the community about the age 26, but I want to shelve that for a moment because I want to get to the other question about, so you can save $14,000 a year. Why? How did that get to be a magic number? And is that too high? Is that too low? Is this just considered just a decent start?
Sure. So the $14,000 is actually the legislation defines the annual giving amount to the gift tax rule, which currently is $14,000, that traditionally or typically is adjusted for inflation by Congress.
Right.
And so we use that to help you know, adjust that annual cap, hopefully to increase it over time. The original legislation we introduced in the last Congress did not have a cap at all, but back to my earlier point, that helps lower the score.
Sounds like they're coming to get you, Sarah.
What's that?
I hear police action in the back of you, but that's
okay.
Mark,
I'm okay. I think welcome to D.C. Right? There's always something going on.
Yes,
exactly. Everybody must be familiar with that by now. So, Mark, when it was first introduced that there wasn't going to be a cap, obviously that sounds a little bit more. I'd be a little bit more amenable to that, you know, myself, thinking that there isn't a cap. 14,000 is nice, but, you know, what do you think? Is that enough? Is this just considered a good start within the planning community that you come from? I mean, what's your take on that?
So I think it's a good start, and I think they used a model that was already there, which is very typical, and that allows a lot of laws to get passed rather than trying to recreate the entire situation. So, you know, the 529 non-ABLE account that's used for higher education has a limit. It does have a couple of provisions that the ABLE Act doesn't have as far as lumping it together. But this is a new program, and just like the original 529 for college education started, it's going to morph. It's going to change. It's going to grow as we start to use it, and it's implemented by the public. And so I think that Sarah's right. We're just at the beginning part of it. Yes, the law was passed, and that's wonderful. But there are a lot of pieces right now that are still unclear. And until people start implementing these accounts and using them and feeling how it works and how some of the laws within it work, because some of them are still not fully clear, I think we'll see a lot more come out of it. And the 529 college account has morphed into a really good account. It was very restrictive originally and was something we didn't recommend at the onset, and now it's something we recommend for a lot of clients.
Interesting. Okay. But, I was doing some research on it, and, of course, everybody's heralding the passage of this, including myself. But, you know, there are some folks out there saying, hey, $14,000 a year, are you still putting us, you're still sticking us in poverty? So, no bill is ever perfect. And again, kudos to everybody who got this passed given the challenges of this Congress. So, what about this cap of $100,000? So, help me understand, first of all. So, what happens if you, first of all, put in more than $14,000 a year? And then, secondly, it says the account you can have up to $100,000. Why can you only have up to $100,000? And what happens if you have more than $100,000? Because there will be some really super wealthy people, I would imagine, who are going to be opening these accounts and will have a lot of money to throw around. So, let's talk about that. Mark, is that maybe in your alley?
Well, I'll
there?
Cover the first part of it, and then Sarah can talk about the second part.
Sure.
So I'll go back to the three buckets. So this is one bucket you can put money into, and the bucket is going to be full at $100,000. And it's going to be done with $14,000 increments, and that's per year. No matter how many people want to contribute to it, it can't be more than $14,000 per year. And I think that's good for a beginning. I mean, $100,000 is actually significantly more than the average American across the country has put aside in savings. So this is really helping the disabilities community and, you know, kind of giving an idea about how much they could save, because hopefully it's going to be their own money. It's money they're earning from their jobs and being employed. So that's the goal of it. And that money has a lot freer uses than other money that's more restrictive, like Social Security. And so they can put more money in if they want to. They would just set up a special needs trust, and that is unlimited in how much money they can put in there. So they're not limited in how much money they can have in their benefit, you know, things that would help them. The special needs trust is not directly their money, as we've talked about many times on the show, and that's why it's not subject to Social Security or an asset restriction or limits for the person that is going to access the money. But there are those three buckets, so the current Social Security, the ABLE Act money, and some sort of special needs trust. And what would happen if somebody went over that limit, then they would be put on suspension, so they're not going to be penalized significantly for it, and they would stop getting benefits if that continued. So that's the same case in a lot of other accounts. IRAs are limited, 401ks are limited, 403bs are limited, lots of other retirement accounts. So that's a very typical and not unusual restriction.
Right.
Yes,
Mark,
those are all.
And if I could just piggyback before you talk there, Sarah, because Mark, twice you've mentioned that, you know, this is going to be their money that they are working for. But, I mean, isn't it true that not only a person with a disability obviously having a job and contributing to their ABLE Act fund going towards that $14,000 a year, I mean, could that part of that $14,000 also be from a brother, a sister, an aunt, an uncle as well?
It can be. It can be funded by any member of your or your family or any outside person. You only have one single account per person, so it can't exceed the $14,000 on an annual basis.
Got it. Okay, great. Thank you. So, so Sarah, it sounds like so if you hit over $100,000, then you stop having access to your Social Security check. Is that the case?
Yes, that's the case. The $100,000 is—it's not an actual overall cap on the entire account. It's only related to your Social Security benefits, and that was in the original bill that we worked on and introduced in the last Congress. And that was really a way to say, to Mark's point, this is a lot of money. We're allowing somebody with a disability to save almost $100,000. And remain on their benefits while they do that. So I don't think people realize the significance of just that provision alone in the bill. We've basically raised the asset limitation from $2,000 to $100,000 in this legislation, which is also quite significant for the community.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. No doubt. So one thing I wasn't clear on in reading about, so what disabilities are there any disabilities not covered? You know, I think I read it's if you have Social Security disability, obviously you are considered a person with a disability who would be eligible to open up one of these accounts. But what if you're a young person who has had ADHD but isn't receiving Social Security disability and is a college grad and is working. Is that something somebody could go open and have an ABLE Act fund for?
The official answer to that is it's a disability, and you actually will apply for a disability certification. And that certification must state that the individual has a medically determined physical or mental impairment, which results in marked and severe functional limitations. Doesn't say they can't work, nothing to do with work, which is the best part about it, and which can be expected to result in death or which has lasted or can be expected to last for a continuous period of time, not less than 12 months. So that's so someone that's applying that doesn't already get Social Security disability, so they have to apply under this new rule and get a disability certificate. Then, and they also need to have an annual renewal of that, which hasn't been all the way, you know, figured out yet how they're actually going to do that. But they're trying to make it simple, like you do in a lot of other cases for things. So hopefully just at the end of every year, you just fill out a simple form and say, yes, I still have the disability and nothing has changed.
So who makes then that certification when you said you fill out a form and you sort of trying to get this certificate that you have a disability? Who's administering that?
That is going to be filed with this Treasury, the Secretary of Treasury. That's who's getting the information. So they're going to make the determination. So.
Got it. Sarah, is that something that you referenced before that you're still working on?
Yes, we are working very closely. We've met with the Treasury Department, with a couple other disability stakeholders, and we've formed a work group because there's a lot of issues that will be worked out in the reg process, everything from what Mark just described to the disability certification, how you qualify, you know, how the actual accounts will be treated in terms of the number of transactions, because these are going to be very different structured very differently from the traditional 529 program. And I'm sure Mark and his colleagues, as well as other financial institutions, will be involved in the reg process so we can make sure that all of our time and energy and resources we put to getting able across the finish line, we want to make these the best accounts possible for our families.
Absolutely. Amen to that. And but I understand I can't just, you can't just go to your local bank and say, hey, give me one of those ABLE Act accounts. It's state by state, but a lot of states are on board, but some aren't yet. Can you talk me through that? How does a consumer figure that out? And is there going to be a long delay in some parts of the country?
Great question. So, yes, because this is modeled off of the 529 program, it is a state-run program. And so that requires us to have a follow-on piece of legislation in every state so that they can offer the program and establish their relationships with companies like Mark. So we've had 25 states, so we're at 50% going into this new legislative session that have introduced or close to introducing state ABLE Act-led pieces of legislation. In fact, we've already had two states, Minnesota and Virginia, pass their bills, and we have a couple that will probably get passed this week or later next week.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, I'm not surprised about Minnesota. We always hear, even though they're so terribly cold and probably challenging for wheelchair access, but in their spirit, they are so progressive on the disability front. So that's glad. I'm happy to hear that. Very, very interesting. Okay. So, Mark, talk about how this word about this wonderful benefit now for families, how does this get out into the mainstream of America so that folks can start taking advantage of it?
Well, I think the first step is to do wonderful things like the Mary and Melissa Show and broadcast it and talk about it and talk about the steps that it took to get there. And we do lots of speaking engagements every year. We have webinars that are going out to lots of public and private schools. I think last year we did 60 presentations to different organizations on different things that deal with disabilities, including the ABLE Act. So part of it is a kind of grassroots movement to get information out and available. And as Sarah talked about, it's going to be state-based, and it won't happen all at once. The Department of Treasury has a number of months to provide all the rules and regulations. My last thing that I heard on that was somewhere towards the end of this year, maybe first quarter of next year before that's all done. And then each state needs to pass their own legislation, and then they need to put out a bid for an investor provider. So that's an RFP that has to happen. So there's a bunch of things that have to happen. So a lot of people feel that you won't be able to walk into a bank and sign up for an ABLE Act account for at least another year and a half. You know, some states may be a little faster than that. And some states may not implement it at all, but if they don't do that, they will have a sister state that you can sign up for. So if you're in the state of Missouri and Missouri doesn't have an account available as an ABLE account, they will assign another state that could service your particular account. So that's going to be the way it is. It's a little different than the 529 for education purposes because you don't have to reside in the state that you sign up for. The case for the ABLE Act is the account must be open in the beneficiary's state of residence or a state contracting with this home state. So that's how the rules are going to be.
Well, that's good to hear about the sister state thing.
Yeah.
And so Mark, just for me to understand, though, so will individual banks and investment centers like Merrill Lynch be able to set these up, or will there only be one state-run place? I mean, how's that going to work?
Nobody knows for sure. I think that it'll follow very similar to what the 529 for college education followed, where each state chose their own vendor. So somebody might have chosen Merrill Lynch. We're in like five different states. Somebody might choose, you know, Vanguard or Fidelity or one of the other vendors. So that's probably how it will work. It's also undetermined how much activity is going to be in these accounts. So the beneficiary is allowed to make investments twice a year in a calendar year, which is very similar to the 529 college savings account, so it's kind of mapped the same way. But there might be a lot more transactions coming out of that account. 529s for college education, basically just going to pay, you know, the quarterly or the semi-annual college tuition. They're not treated the same way the discount might be treated. This might be for general type expenses, you know, education expenses, housing, transportation, you know, health, prevention and wellness. So it might be more like a checking account than the 529 for colleges.
Absolutely. I mean, this could be, you know, small increments for transportation and purchases of things. Very, very interesting. And the person with a disability, will he or she have the ability to access that money? Like, you know, if it's in a checking account kind of a way or a debit card, he or she has that card and could say, wow, I'm going to put this towards my my transportation for the next week, and off he or she goes and does their thing.
That is correct.
How much independence truly?
So the beneficiary of the account is the account owner. So there is still a lot of talk, and each state will make their own decisions on exactly how they want to implement that. So let's say you have, like, my son, who's now 18. So if you gave my son, you know, $100,000 in his savings account, he would not know how to handle it. And so there's, just like there is with, you know, a UGMA account, Uniform Gift and Minors Act account, it's still available in a lot of states. So each state will kind of make those own decisions, whether there can be, you know, a conservator, you know, also a guardian for that person that would be helping with that account so that the account is used for the best purpose possible. It's also part of the reason, in my opinion, that they came up with the number around $14,000. So it's not a huge amount of money that's in there, but it's not a small sum, so that it can be monitored and, you know, it's money is not frittered away, you know, quickly, and people are looking at the proper way to handle the money and hopefully teaching. And I'm repeating myself, but the empowerment is the most important part of all this. The new words in the legislation were very terrific because it's not subject to someone that you know, doesn't have the ability to work. It's subject on people that have a disability, and they want them to work, and they're giving them an incentive to work, and they're giving them an incentive to save money. They're giving them an incentive to be able to put a down payment on a house and to plan for college education and to plan for their weddings and all the other things that they couldn't do with a $2,000 limit.
Yeah, that $2,000 limit was so, I don't even know what year I could reference, but what a welcome change to that. So, Sarah, it sounds like you have quite an agenda still ahead of you. How are you going to pull all this off? You're one person. Tell us about your chapters or affiliates that, and what role will they be playing going forward in putting the final touches on this good piece of legislation?
Sure, Mary. Great question. You know, just like we got the federal piece of legislation across the finish line in December, this is really a collaborative team effort, and I can't emphasize that enough. We're basically just channeling that momentum. We're channeling the personal stories from our self-advocates on how this legislation is going to change their lives, how parents are going to be able to finally feel like they can save for their children with disabilities just as they can save for their other children. So we're channeling all those stories and just engaging our grassroots and our affiliates and our advocates across the country now to focus on their state capitals. We've had a number of self-advocates with Down syndrome testify before state legislatures over the course of the last couple of weeks. We've even had some members of Congress, Congressman Kevin Yoder from Johnson County, Olathe, Kansas, went to Topeka and basically, you know, lobbied on the efforts of ABLE at the state level. We had Congresswoman Kathy McMorris Rogers from Washington State join her state, you know, join the hearing on ABLE in Washington State and voice her opinion and testify. So we're essentially just taking everything we were able to do last year and having our folks shift and focus on the state advocacy push. And given that it's just beginning of March and most state legislatures started in January, February, we're doing pretty well that we have half the states that have taken action.
Wow, that's amazing. And I our state, our non-state District of Columbia, are we going to have a sister state, or how are we doing here, if anybody knows?
I don't think that the District of Columbia has actually introduced their bill. That's something we should certainly look into. The other flexibility that was written in the provisions of the legislation is that states can contract with other states. So say Oklahoma decides that they don't want to move forward on the 529A legislation, they could enter into an agreement with Kansas and offer the Kansas program to families in Oklahoma.
All right. Well, that'll be something to check out, actually, with our fair new mayor, Miriam Bowser, see where she is on this, because we don't want any grass to grow on any movement that's forward movement for our folks with disabilities here at all. So that's great. Great to hear. And Mark, how about you? So what are you doing in the meantime to get folks ready for this? Telling everybody to squirrel away their $14K a year to get ready to make that first deposit? I mean, how's this, other than doing this show, how do shops like you and planners like you start prepping for this?
Yeah, so it's just another piece of the puzzle. So when you're talking to a family and they're trying to figure out how much money do I need to put aside for my child, or how much money can my child put aside for himself, which is even better, this is just another place that money can be put aside. And the analogy I always use for clients is that, you know, you work and you have a 401k at work, and you might have an IRA account, and you might have a savings account, and you might have CDs at the bank. So all those buckets you're going to use in order to be able to make sure you can comfortably retire. Same situation for somebody who has a disability. They're going to have a special needs trust. They're going to have money coming in for Social Security. They're going to have the ABLE account. They may have a pool trust. So they're going to have all these different buckets, and they're going to use those buckets to be able to live off of and to be able to provide for their own retirement.
Fantastic. Well, this is really a tremendous achievement for the disability community. And I could only see this bringing good things, even though, you know, there are some folks who are, from what I was just reading online, saying, oh, gee, it's only $14,000, it's only this. But goodness, from what it was, this is light years away, and it will only continue to increase and get better. And we have folks like you to thank, and the self-advocates. So this is onwards and upwards, indeed, for the community. So I want to thank you both very much for everything that you've done, but also for giving the ins and outs about the ABLE Act, the greatly named Achieving a Better Life Experience Act. So thank you both.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having us on.
Thank you so much, Mary.
Absolutely. All right. Well, everyone, we will keep on with tracking how the ABLE Act gets online in the various states. And you should always know that you could look up Mark Fries at Merrill Lynch for information about the ABLE Act or special needs trust, pool trusts, and, of course, Sarah Weir over at the National Down Syndrome Society is also a tremendous asset and somebody who could be helpful as well. And so we thank all of you for listening to this show and all of our shows. And remember that they're all archived and available 24/7 on our site, which is inclusionzone.org and hosted by Blog Talk Radio. So thank you all again for listening to another edition of the Mary and Melissa Show. And we'll be at you soon again with another terrific topic of relevance for our community. Thank you all.
You never forget this one, this is part of my collection. A multiplication. That's the name of the game. And each generation. Play the same. Well, let me tell you now, I'm a single and one in five. You can walk into this. But you take your feet and you quit.